And now for reading and writing and radio. And now for reading and writing and radio.
Time has come, the walrus said, to speak of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings, and why the sea is boiling hot, and whether pigs have wings. But wait a bit, the oysters cried, before we have our chat, for some of us are out of breath, and all of us are fat.
No hurry, said the carpenter. They thanked him much for that.
That bit of memorization was from The Walrus and the Carpenter by Lewis Carroll, recited by Jacqueline and Jillian Jackson. And you could memorize it, too. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Our topic today is memorization. I have a poem here by Sarah Teasdale. Into my heart's treasury I slipped a coin that time cannot take, nor a thief purloin. Oh, better than the minting of a gold-crowned king is the safe-kept memory of a lovely thing. And that safe-kept memory is something that you know by heart, that you know by memory. Today we have with us Jillian Jackson, who just recited with me a portion of The Walrus and the Carpenter, and Elspeth Jackson, and Elizabeth Graham. And we're going to talk some about memorization. I'm wondering, everybody, why is it, do you suppose, that nobody's asked to memorize anything anymore?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of hard. And I think people think
it doesn't have value. That's what people think.
Folks don't want to do it anymore.
And the teachers.
So they've, I don't know.
What, they think rote memory is...
It doesn't stimulate your creative thoughts or something.
Mm-hmm. Now, Elizabeth, you were a school teacher in the Springfield schools for 40-some years. Did you ask your students to memorize?
Always.
Always?
Always. And my own idea is that the person who doesn't have stored in his mind something that he's memorized is going to go through a good many crises when he's lost. He needs it. He needs to be able, for instance, when I had a major operation, I remember very definitely that the one comfort that I had were the things that I had memorized that would come back to me. And I wasn't able to read, I wasn't able to talk, but those things would waft through my mind.
You were thrown and back on the resources of your own mind.
I think that happens with us in our waking hours all the time, that we go through almost half asleep, but those things that we recall of not only perfect memorizing of somebody's words, but thoughts and ideas and names and all of that. Memory keeps you alive. If you've ever seen a person whose memory has left him, it's the most pathetic thing in the world.
Yes. The teachers that I remember best are the ones that made me memorize. I know that in high school I had to memorize the middle section of Ulysses. I am a part of all that I have met, yet all experiences an arch where through gleams that untraveled world whose margin fades forever and forever when I move. And I just regret that that teacher didn't make us memorize the whole thing. I had an eighth grade teacher that made us memorize bits of Shelley, Ode to a Skylark. We look before and after and pine for what is not. Our sincerest laughter with some pain is fraught. Our sweetest songs are those that tell of saddest thought. And she picked them out. Jill, I know that you've enjoyed memorizing, and we've put poetry, for instance, all over the wall of our bathroom at our cottage at the lake. And you've learned all of that, and you did learn the whole of Ulysses. Tell me how you feel about memorizing.
When you post it in the bathroom, I mean, you...
Well, why do you memorize, Jill?
Well, it's an accomplishment. You can feel that you've done something when you've done it, and to be able to reel off 70 lines is something. It's rather impressive.
Well, I enjoy hearing you reel it off. And Elizabeth, I recall you're saying that you love to hear Jill recite things.
I love to hear her, and I remember with great joy the fact that Adelia Metzger, one of the students that I had in early years, learned the entire Lycidas. And when she stood up in front of that class and gave the entire Lycidas, the class there just were their mouths open and looked at it. And time and again they would say, have her give that again.
Yeah, you command a certain respect when you can do something like that.
Admiration.
People say, wow, mm-hmm. You know, listen to that.
Well, you kids began memorizing with the nursery rhymes when we read them to you. Jill, you and Else, you both memorized the nursery rhymes. Do you remember
any? It's hard not to.
Why is it hard not to memorize a nursery rhyme?
Because, well, you hear them so
often.
Yeah,
when you hear them all the time and they're short and catchy.
Yeah, it's like learning the alphabet.
Uh-huh.
They're also very well written in that the words are good.
And then they've got a swing and a rhythm
yes.
to them.
Yeah.
I can remember
extra.
I used to rock uh-huh. with my brother, and he'd sit on one end of the chair and I'd sit on the other, and we'd take these nursery rhymes and then chime in with the just sheer rhythm and joy of them. They sing themselves into you.
Yeah.
Well, a kid that's been raised on nursery rhymes and memorizes them has a much stronger command of the language than a kid that hasn't. Because the nursery rhymes really have excellent words and sounds and rhythms to them. So that would be my first thing to have a kid memorize, and that would just be not by saying, now you sit down there and memorize Little Miss Muffet.
Well,
you learn them by osmosis, by catching them.
Yeah.
What else?
I always assumed that everybody knew nursery rhymes, but I was really shocked when, you know, oh, I never, you know, just someone would
or, you know,
have
most,
heard them.
Most everybody knows
a few of
Rock-a-bye
them.
Baby, for instance. But some
but
of the
more
esoteric nursery
yeah.
rhymes.
Like there was an old woman thrown up in a basket 19 times as high as the moon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that the one where she sweeps it down from
yeah, right. where she was going, I couldn't but ask it, for in her hand she carried a broom. Old woman, old woman, old woman, quoth I, oh whither, oh whither, oh whither so high, to sweep the cobwebs out of the sky. And wilt thou come with me? Aye, by and by. You know, that's beautiful language there. There's one you kids have said that I've thoroughly enjoyed that I don't know. That one about the pussy catio. Can you guys say
that's not a nursery rhyme.
That's a written poem.
Well, that's a poem.
I'll say that one.
Well, it's a little strange. It goes, there
was
a wee bit mousy key that lived in Gilberadio. He could no get a bit o' cheese for cheaty pussy catio. He said unto the cheesy, oh, fain would I be at ye, if 'twere no for the cruel claws of cheaty pussy catio.
Well, then there was another one that what was the one about March said? I've heard you say that one, Jill. Can you say that one? Do you remember it?
March said to April, I see three hoggies on a hill, and if you give me days three, I'll find a way to make them dee. Well, the first of them was wind and wheat, and the second of them was snaw and sleet, and the third of them was sick of freeze, it froze the wee birds to the trees. And when the 3 days were over and done, the three silly hoggies came herpling home.
Herpling home, that's marvelous. Why did you memorize that one?
I
think I know, but...
It was peculiar.
you know,
Dee,
some of you listening, it's a Scottish dialect, isn't it? Because Dee means die. What are hoagies?
Hoggies.
Piggies?
She said hoggies.
All right.
First she said piggies on a hill, and then hoggies came her.
No, I said hoggies on a hill.
Oh, well.
Okay, well, it's a fun one to memorize. And then I recall the one that we've got on the bathroom wall that you particularly mentioned, Elspeth. The river one.
Oh, yeah.
How does that one go?
Down the Oozley River, something.
Along the squedgy bank.
Along the squedgy bank where the rivers ripple or something, and where the reeds are rank, where the mighty kippo or something like that.
Makes an awful fuss,
lives a hip hip hippo hippopotamus. I don't know. I don't remember that one totally.
Well, those words are fun. Elizabeth, have you got a favorite poem you can give us?
I'm going to take one this afternoon. We had a little 8-year-old boy that came in and
visited the Lindsay
recited.
House. Elizabeth is the curator at the Lindsay House here in Springfield, and she shows guests through the house.
And this boy, I'd recited a half a dozen of the various Lindsay poems to him. And then he said, "What's that one that you said where it made noises?" Said the yap-yap to the clap-trap, "Why do you grow so big?" Said the clap-trap to the yap-yap, "By eating like a pig." And he said on the thing, "You know, when I go home, I'm going to get that book of Johnny Appleseed, and I'm going to learn the whole of those. That boy learned 28 of them. I'm going to learn every one that's in the book." He said, "I just love learning." And then he started in of how he loved to recite, and his delight, not only in reading, but that he could recite what he had learned. And I was quite delighted to listen to him, because he was so happy in it. And he'd say every now and then, this is such fun.
Well, it really is fun, and that's one of the sad things about memorization. People have made it seem like it's such a chore and not fun.
Well, they use it for a punishment.
They use it for punishment, right.
Grade them high or grade them low, or stand instead of the thing, this I want to learn, this I want.
Well, I've heard of a teacher that actually gives it as punishment. If you disobey the rules, you know, you have to learn so many lines of poetry. Now, isn't that enough to make poetry haters and memorizing haters out of people? Well, she wanted to say something.
Yes. In that same book that she was talking about, the Johnny Appleseed, there's a whole section of moon poems, and I think they're real nice.
This boy said he was going to learn every one of those.
Yeah, well, I especially like that one, What the Forester Said, and I just realized just now that I know at least the first two lines of it.
Let's hear them.
It goes, the first two lines, "The moon is but a candle glow that flickers through the gloom, and earth, the little children's something," I don't know, that was the first two lines, and that's the third line I was trying to get, something like that. It was real nice.
Well, with time, you could probably recall
those.
Yes,
well, the thing is, I didn't memorize it. I didn't try to memorize it. I just realized just now that I knew them.
Well, I think the memory that's most satisfactory is the memory that you like this, and you like it, and you say it kind of over to yourself and repeat it. And Vachel did that thing so often with people. He'd take a thing and repeat it. And that's where so many of those, where he repeats a line twice, and they like that repetition and the feeling, and you get into it, and then you get wanting to learn more and more and more. That.
Well, when you memorize something, you memorize it because you like it, unless you're, you know, made to in school, and sometimes you decide later on that you really like it too.
You like the sound of it.
Yeah, and of course
you like
you can
the
discard,
idea of it.
You can discard the things you don't like.
Preamble to the Constitution.
But,
Yeah,
if you have to learn the Constitution preamble or something like that, that may stick with you or it may not. But the kinds of things that, poems and so forth, some of those will stay with you and some of them won't.
I had a little boy that in 58 I read a number of the animal poems. They're what I call the whole zoo book with all of the various animal poems. And that chap now is 17 years old. This was in 58. And was here in town. He was in the fourth grade. And he came up from Louisiana, and he hitchhiked his way up. And the one thing that he wanted was to come there and hear more of those poems. And he said, I want to get some more of those because I want to get some so I learn them. He said, it's the happiest time I've had in my life with those poems.
And to learn them by heart.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it was the thing with him. He thought over these years, here he is 17 years old, and he was in fourth grade at the time, and he recalls those as a significant part of his life.
Yes. You two were mentioning one tonight that you, in fact, you said it together, the Laura Richards poem about the elephant. Let's hear that one. How does it go, Elspeth?
I don't know if I can get through it alone. I don't know.
Well, Jill will give you some help.
Once there was an elephant
who tried to use the telephone.
No, I mean the elephone who tried to use the telephone.
Dear me, I am not certain quite that even now I've got it right. However it was, he got his trunk entangled in the telefunk. The more he tried to get it free, the louder buzzed the telephy. I fear I'd better drop the song of elephop and telephong.
That's pretty good. We were talking about the values of memorizing, and Elizabeth already mentioned the time she was flat on her back in the hospital, and you mentioned memorizing things like books for emergency situations, for heart attacks or drowning or things like that. You learn those by heart, and I said yes, and then this sort of thing is spiritual emergencies. I think when you're lying flat on your back in the hospital, or when you're bored, you know, that's a spiritual emergency, to be able to bring something out of your mind that is worth pondering on and thinking on. The stories that came out of the Second World War and before, of people in concentration camps or in solitary confinement, the ways they survived was because they had something in their minds.
When the boys came back and lay on the lawn in our yard and were talking about their war experiences, they said they were so glad for what they had learned of the Lady of the Lake and the Idylls of the King, because there were two books that almost all of the soldiers had some of those lines. And so when they would start them, right when they were in the midst of war, and that would go up and down the line, and they would quote those, and they were so brought back home and so full of their past, which they were hungry for, of course, that war experience where they could quote some of the words that they'd learned meant so much to them. And I listened to them talking out on the grass, and I remembered it all these years, because after all, that goes back to the First World War.
So that there are future rewards for memorizing right now, and we've talked about some of the present rewards, which is the fun and that people appreciate it. Jill, you mentioned that there was a monetary reward. What's the story of Uncle Craig?
Well, my uncle decided he liked something well enough that he paid his son to memorize it for him, so that whenever he wanted to hear it, he could just say, Trevor, recite that for me.
And it was a sort of a horrid verse. It was
It's terrific.
It's a catalog. It's an ABC of horrible deaths of little children. A is for Amy that fell down the stairs.
B is for Basil assaulted by bears.
C is for Clara,
who wasted away.
And D is for Desmond thrown out of a sleigh.
E is for Eustace,
who choked on a peach. F is for Fanny, sucked dry by a leech.
Anyway,
should we go on? Anyway, and it goes up to Y is for Yorick, whose head was bashed in, and Z is for Zilla, who drank too much gin. Right?
And the little Willie.
The little Willie poems,
yes. And the boys down at the university, when they'd be serenading us at night, would stand down outside the window and quote some of these little Willie. And they loved it. They were serenading. That was great fun.
My mother said that when she was a little girl in grade school, they had a principal who would come in on every Monday and write on the blackboard some great quotations. And the kids would learn them during that week, and the following Monday he would come in and they would all recite them, and then he would erase it and put up a new quotation. And my mother is in her 80s, and she says she remembers those now, and how much it meant to her and to the whole school. The younger kids learned easier ones, and the older kids learned older ones.
Longer
ones. And so she's always considered that that was worthwhile.
I went down to buy some shoes in one of the stores here, and when I went in, I had taught the Chaucer, "When that Aprilla with the shore is so ten," those lovely lines in the music of Chaucer. And all at once, when this man was selling, he started in on this, and he followed through and quoted the first 15 lines of the Chaucer. Just the sight of me and somebody who had taught it to him, and he was loving it there as he was at his work. It stayed with him. It was something of real importance to him.
Jill, you read me a passage. Why don't we have this passage out of, it's a mystery book by Dorothy Sayers, but she has her hero, her detective, quoting various poets and things like that, and it turns out that the police constable also knows poetry. And read us that little bit there, Jill, because I think he puts it very well.
"So," said Peter, "Galahad will sit down in Merlin's seat." Mr. Kirk, on the point of lowering his heavy weight into the chair, jerked up abruptly. "Alfred," said he, "Lord Tennyson." "Got it in one," said Peter, mildly surprised. A glow of enthusiasm shone softly in the policeman's ox-like eyes. "You're a bit of a student, aren't you, Superintendent?" "I like to do a bit of reading in my off-duty," admitted Mr. Kirk bashfully. "It mellows the mind." He sat down. "I often think as the routine of police duty may tend to narrow a man and make him a bit hard, if you take my meaning. When I find that happening, I say to myself, what you need, Sam Kirk, is contact with a great mind or so after supper."
I really like that, you know, is contact with a great mind or so after supper. It's
it brings it home.
It's homey, you know. You can have contact with a great mind after supper. And so I think our point of this discussion is that if you put into your heart's treasury a golden coin, if you have it in your head, if you have it in your heart, really, then you've got it to draw on in spiritual emergencies, in time, or for fun, you know, in times of pain, in times of boredom, in times of joy. There are many things you can do with these things in your head. And so what can we write about today that's got to do with memorization? Well, what have you ever memorized? Why did you memorize it? Because you had to? Were you glad or sorry? Has it grown on you? How do you feel about it now? And if you haven't memorized something, or even if you have, why don't you pick something to learn by heart? And then tell us what you've learned and why. Elizabeth, you look like you wanted to say something.
Well, as I was thinking of the memory, it isn't necessarily where you memorize poetry or memorize prose or exactly as it is. There's this other thing. My two younger sisters in the morning got up a couple of hours later than I did to go down to breakfast and so on. But the first thing that they'd always say in the room, "Come on in with us and tell us a story." In other words, it's not only the memorization of a poem or a prose passage, but it's also this story that you have, this holding it in mind and cherishing it. I feel sorry for those people who have only vulgar words, ugly words, cheap words, drivel.
Or just ordinary words.
Or gossip.
Know. Okay, so for today, let's try writing down some of the great words and thoughts that we have learned, or let's learn some and then write about how we feel. Memorization, into our heart's treasury we slip golden coins.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.